I'm Jonathan Green. You're listening to Lost and Found, and this week we're off to Milan. What does that word conjure? Glamour, sophistication, design, perhaps even a creamy saffron risotto. There's enough there to almost make the city a caricature, but thank heavens, there is more to Milan than Fashion Week and rice. So where can we find the real Milan? Well, we'll get there, but first, a quick primer. Milan is the capital of Italy's northern Lombardy region, and it's nestled at the foothills of the Italian Alps. And over its long and storied history, Milan has been invaded, looted, bombed, traded between various European powers. But time and time again, the city has risen and maintained its place as one of Italy's, indeed Europe's, main economic engine rooms. So you could think of Milan as one long palimpsest with various rulers from Romans to the Habsburgs, even Silvio Berlusconi, have grafted layer upon layer of their stories onto the city. And today, well, it's hard to ignore one of the most obvious Milanese stories of the modern era, fashion.
Attenzione prego, informiamo tutti i passeggeri in partenza con il volo Alitalia Z1020 per Milano Malpensa, che il suddetto volo verrà imbarcato tra circa 5 minuti. Grazie per la cortese attenzione. May I get on ship please with all passengers leaving to Milano Malpensa with Alitalia flight 1020, but the flight will be boarded in about 5 minutes. Thank you for your kind attention.
I had flown here for the interview and met with Donatella.
Ashley Fletcher, head of menswear at Versace, describing his first visit to Milan.
I had a big conundrum. So I wore Vans trainers that were basically full of holes and a black suit that I'd borrowed from a friend. And the only thing she noticed was the polka dot socks. Walking around the city, I was kind of blown away because it's regal in its architecture in the central part. So I was kind of in a daze walking around these incredible buildings and statues. So after meeting her, I was kind of stunned, thinking, gosh, what's going on?
Well, what precisely did happen in Milan for it to become the art and design hub it is today? Eugenia Palicelli is director of the Fashion Studies Program and professor of Italian Literature and Women's Studies at the City University of New York. She's here to help us out.
I am originally from the South, so Milan is a different universe, but it's been a city very much similar to the northern European capitals. You know, one historian called Milan la capitale morale, so the moral capital, because of course Milan was never a capital of the country. When Italy was unified in the second half of the 19th century, so we actually had the alternation of three capitals in Italy. But Milan was never one of them. And of course, Rome synthesized that mythology, an important role that has had, you know, for centuries, as, you know, the center of Christianity, the Pope, and so many other mythologies around Rome. So it's a different city. But Milan has been a capital, certainly for, you know, innovation, research, industry. If you think of Italian fashion, for example, you know, you cannot understand it in depth if you really don't think about cities in Italy, different cities and the history of the cities in Italy. And indeed, you know, we have to go back even at the Middle Ages, when the first cities in different parts of Italy, they became trade, the crafts, all these kind of workshops. And then, of course, you know, the Renaissance and the courts, and Milan was one of the most powerful courts in Italy and in Europe. Even artists of the caliber of Leonardo da Vinci worked in Milan for the Sforza's family. He staged theater. He also even designed, you know, textiles. So it's just fascinating. And so the thing that it is important, I think, to perceive and almost have a sense of the identity in Milan. It has a distinctiveness, which I think has to do with the certain, you know, creativity in the design. And, you know, you see that because many architects, schools also in Milan still today. So it's a hub. It's been a hub of all this kind of creativity and the arts, you know, movements of avant-garde artists. Milan also was, in the beginning of the 20th century and also later on, the place where a debate on Italian fashion started. Much, you know, we are talking about the 1910s. So when Milan also was the place where they had the big expos, like they still have today, you know, in different cities in the world. So in Milan, for example, in 1906, there was an important expo that was dedicated to, you know, to progress and mobility, because there was a lot of innovations in terms of the industry. And so it's fascinating to see that. And one of the, I mean, I have to mention, because she was a feminist and she was an activist, Rosa Genoni, who was in Milano, and she won this great first prize for her collection at the time when only Paris was known to the world. And so I think it's been a long path to this sense of self and identity and the production of cultural capital. And I think there is this distinctiveness of cities and the architecture, museums, the spaces. You know, in Milan you can find, you know, these wonderful museums of the Renaissance artists, the Castello Sforzesco. Then you can find the Fondazione Prada, which is also a fantastic place where they organized important, very important art exhibitions, you know, from futurism, modernism, and so forth. So I think there is this cocktail, very balanced and cocktail of dynamism, modernism, a sense also of minimalist style, because you see it's different Milan from the style in Rome. Even the way people dress is different. So this is quite fascinating also to see. I am Italian, of course, but you know, I've been living in the US for many, many years. So, and it's always interesting for me when I visit, and I immediately notice these differences.
There's a particular kind of Milanese shura, which basically means a shura is kind of a posh old lady.
Versace's Ashley Fletcher.
So there's definitely this style which almost feels, or at least it doesn't feel vintage necessarily, but it feels reminiscent of something from the past. So in the winter, that might be for a lady, you know, a coat with a fur collar, a bag with a bamboo handle, much like Queen Elizabeth would wear something, a rigid bag, heels always in heels, always makeup and hair, and always sunglasses, even in the winter, actually.
Fashion Week, for those involved, like yourself, must be an extraordinary time, that sort of mixed of high anticipation, of dread, then followed by ecstasy and relief.
Yeah, that, in a nutshell. it's a lot of tension. I mean, the build-up is months, because you're working on the collection, developing the collection, And when you're creating the collection, you're kind of in the zone, so you're not thinking of what other people might think. You're just interested in what your team think, and making sure that the ideas feel as powerful and strong as they can be, and you're working to the best of your ability. So that's a process of 2 or 3 months. So by the time it gets to the actual fashion week, a month before or 2 weeks before, that's when you're launching final kind of prototypes, final clothes. And then when everything arrives, it's basically a kid in a candy store, or it's like Christmas morning, and you're working for, usually that's a week before Fashion Week, and you're working intensely on the looks with the stylist, and the team is very busy, and you're working late because of this fear and energy and anxiety. But that also creates kind of a positive boost in terms of the way that you work as a team. There's this nervous energy, and then when you do the show, it's 10 minutes.
Walk for me.
I'll see you after the function.
And afterwards, it's this huge relief. But of course, then you have anxiety about, will people like it? Will it sell? And that, you know, that is the energy almost that gives you the energy to do the next one.
After that wild, frantic 10 minutes, where do you head? Where do you go post-show?
I love to go. I mean, there's so many fantastic places. I love Bar Basso, which is a very, I mean, it's a historical bar. It's extremely popular in Design Week in Salone del Mobile, which is in April usually, which is this huge design week for architecture and interiors. And yeah, it's like the place to be in Fashion Week, and it's the place to be in Salone del Mobile. It's very famous for these lethal, enormous cocktails, Negronis. That's a really great place. And for always a cute, cozy dinner, I love going to Giacomo Bistro, which feels like walking into a 1920s library with this really amazing walnut bar. A really beautiful place just to kind of be cozy and intimate with friends.
An entire country in lockdown, 60 million people in quarantine. It's the most extreme measure yet to contain the virus. 2 weeks ago, restrictions began in Italy. Now they're the most drastic since the Second World War. People are not allowed to gather in public. Schools and universities are closed, and no one can leave the country without a special permit.
Milan, of course, was particularly ravaged by the pandemic. Having been one of the first Western cities to suffer a swift and lethal outbreak of COVID-19 early last year. And you've seen the vision of hospitals, of frontline workers overwhelmed, the elderly dying in droves, and Milan brought to an eerie and abnormal quiet. Today, the death toll for Milan's surrounding region of Lombardy is more than 33,400. To put this in perspective, Australia has had a total death toll of 910. Suffice to say, the pandemic has had a chilling effect on this European powerhouse.
Look, the restaurant scene in Milan at the moment is pretty grim because Milan is still in strict lockdown.
Ah, Silvia Colocca, an Italian-Australian who does many things, opera, acting and cooking.
And they have been on and off a strict lockdown for the past 15 months. So most restaurants have closed and hopefully they'll reopen at some point. But for example, my brother is a chef and the restaurant he'd been working at in the center of Milan near Duomo, that has been closed for maybe 13 months now. So it's a really hard one to imagine because obviously I have not lived the pandemic there. So I don't know how it would really look like apart from the images that I've seen, because normally Milan is really busy. It's a very busy, bustly, place where people have got things to do and places to go, and there's restaurants absolutely everywhere, and there's districts that are entirely dedicated to the food scene and what's called La Movida. For example, the Navili district, which now would be quite desolate to imagine, which is where the canals run in the city on either side of the banks, there's just one restaurant after the other, bars, and it's just a wonderful thing to go for a walk, you know, on a balmy summer evening, you know, bring mosquito repellent, obviously, because there's canals there, so they'll eat you alive, but, you know, you go and have aperitivo, and then you'll go and have a pizza, gelato, and it's just what I miss the most, really, about my hometown, is that sort of simplicity of walking into a street and watching the fun unfold and saying, that's where I want to go.
Streets, they're the interconnecting tissue of any city. And like many European metropoles, Milan's cityscape is one that still bears the hallmarks of urban planners from centuries ago. From the remnants of its medieval core to the dizzying heights of the city's new office towers, Milan is rich in architectural history. Massimo Bricaccoli is a professor of urban planning and policies at the Department of Architecture and Urban Studies at the Milan Polytechnic. He's going to take us for a quick spin around his city.
So I would take you definitely to Duomo Square, because that's the So Milano is like a spider net. If you look at the map, it's really like a spider net. It's absolutely monocentrical. And then with radial axis and ring roads around the city center. And at the core, you have the Duomo. So I think it's also very good to have a point of reference. Milano was founded by the Romans, so it's an ancient city. It also had an exceptional boom during the Renaissance, so 1400, 1500. So there are some incredible buildings, starting from the Duomo, which is late Gothic, and then some exceptional Renaissance building, like one of the first hospitals which were ever built in the world. It's a huge, tremendous, beautiful Renaissance building. But then Milano was also bombed during Second World War. If you watch movies of the 60s or 70s even, it's interesting because which were shot in Milano, you have a urban landscape which is a combination of ruins. So you still see the effects of the bombs. Then you see the new buildings, the very modernist buildings, office buildings. It's not like a German city or a Dutch city which has been severely devastated. In some cases, it was very specific. So the Scala Theater, for example. So the Opera Theater of Milano, which is one of the symbols of the city, was in fact bombed. Mm-hmm. And the main hall was destroyed. So not the whole building, but there were big damages. What is interesting is to realize that many of the buildings have been restored, renewed. And this also led to quality in architecture, because many interventions, either they had to recover the building in the original state, or they decided to go for a combination of restoration and modern intervention. So this, I think, is also very specific for Milano. From Duomo Square, we could take the underground, the line number 3, and we could go to the very end, to the very end station, which is called Comasina. So the yellow line takes you to the very north of the city, on the city border, and then you are in Comasina. Comasina was created in the 50s, in a time in which Milano was really booming with population, and migrants were coming from other regions of Italy, so from southern Italy, from Veneto. So from rural areas, poorer areas, to the economic core of the country. And so lots of workers working in the industries, especially in the northern part of the city. And Komazina was built as a public housing estate, very large. So 83 buildings, what used to be called a self-sufficient neighborhood, because it was combined with the industrial areas around it. So it was an area where workers would be very close to the industries, but far away from the city center. So this already tells a lot about how the city changed, because meanwhile, you don't have the industries anymore. So Komazina turned out to be a residential area. And also the population has been changing a lot during the years, because now you have a combination of the old Italian residents who are now retired, older people. And then you have the newcomers who are mainly the new migrants, very often with a foreign background. So migrants from all over the world. And so it became quite a multi-ethnical neighborhood up there. The suggestion to bring you to Komazina is also because next to Komazina, there is what used to be the psychiatric hospital of the city of Milano. So a very large asylum, a place for mentally ill people. So I would say that the typical psychiatric hospital built in the early 1900s, a very large compound, you should imagine like a large park with a set of buildings, of pavilions in the park, a major building which used to be the administration, so the admission building. And then the different buildings are spread in this very large park. And it was built in 1930. And it developed during the century. And at the end, they used to have about 1,000 living in the hospital. What is special of Italy is that in the 80s, we started to have what is called a reform of mental health policies, a kind of revolution. We call it deinstitutionalization. So the notion of psychiatric hospital was questioned, and there was a movement for the opening of psychiatric hospitals. So this large hospital next to Komazina in the 90s was closed. So it stopped to work as a psychiatric hospital. And this large park with all these pavilions has been slowly transformed. And now it's one of the most attractive places I would recommend to anybody coming to Milan. So the different pavilions have quite different uses. So I went there for dinner. There is a very nice restaurant now working in the open air, which is also a place for job insertion for people with some sort of disadvantage, but mainly it's a very attractive and fascinating place. You have a hostel, so you can sleep, so there is accommodation. Then there is a very beautiful theater, which is located in the building, which used to be the kitchen of the whole hospital. So a huge kitchen in a large building, which is now converted into a theater, which is called Teatro La Cucina, so kitchen theater, which has an exceptional program. So especially in the summer, they have a festival, which is quite high quality and attracting people from all over.
We will put Paolo Pini on our list.
Beccata in discoteca con lo sguardo da serpente, io mi sono avvicinato, lei già non capiva niente. L'ho guardata.
You've been listening to Lost and Found this week in Milan. You heard from Ashley Fletcher, Eugenia Paolicelli, Silvia Colocca, and Massimo Riccacoli. Producers are Lisa DeVissi and Alan Whedon. Technical production by Brendan O'Neill. I'm Jonathan Green.
Oh yeah, si dice così, no? E poi, che idea?
Quale idea?